From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of May, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net. The Farm Doc team is still traveling across Brazil. I spoke with them earlier today. We'll hear more from Joanna Colucci and Gary Schnitke. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss Prevent Plant in North Dakota. We'll do that with NDSU agricultural economist Brain Olson on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn finished the day unchanged at 596 and a half. September at 532 and three quarters down four and a quarter. And December at 529 and three quarters, a nickel lower. July soybeans at 1433 and three quarters down two and three quarters. August 8 lower at 1365 and a half. And November down seven and a half at $12.72 and a half. The bean meal 80 cents higher. The bean oil down 68 cents. Wheat futures soft red for the day. July harvest month at 654, six and a quarter lower. The hard red at 844 and a quarter, up 11 and a quarter for the afternoon. Live cattle futures at 162.42 and a half, 50 cents higher. Feeders 167 and a half higher, 223.10. And lean hogs at $83.30 per 100 pounds, down 47 and a half cents. The crude oil for the day at $73.33, about $1.96 higher, rather. Yeah, $1.96 higher for the day. Diesel fuel up 6 7/10 at 238 and 2/10, and gasoline on the wholesale price at 246 and a half, 8 6/10 of a higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 52 points lower at 33,687. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net to discuss the trade in Chicago. Hi, Kurt. Thank you very much for being with us. Let's start with the rainfall over the weekend. It looked like a lot of the Midwest did get some rain. I know I talked to Brain Olson. We'll hear from him later, and they did in North Dakota. I think Iowa did. Certainly we did here. How much rain came, and was it enough to make a big difference or create problems?
It depends where you were. It was highly variable, of course, looking at the maps and visiting with producers all around. Here locally, we had anywhere from 1 to 3 inches. There's some lesser amounts in some areas, but gosh, for the most part, there's a few spots, 5, 6, 7 inches, and that's just a little too much. Then, too, there's some pictures of some golf ball size hail up to baseball size hail. Gosh, man, that's the last thing we need to see that materialize. But I think it's enough to kind of take the edge off for the most part, because we saw some very windy, dry conditions materialize. We saw some uneven emergence in some areas. So I think this rain event kind of helped. Another rain event coming at us here towards the weekend. So we'll see how the forecast goes. It's kind of in the hands of the weatherman, and not only here in the U.S., but also in South America for that second Brazilian corn crop.
What do we know about the crop progress report for this afternoon? It's due out at 3 o'clock Central Time. Are there expectations from the trade?
Yeah, on the corn progress wide range, 34 to 64%. Most numbers coming in about 48% completed as a nation versus 26% last week, that is. Beans anywhere from 25 to 41%. The average guess is about 34%, 19% last week. And wheat conditions about 30% good to excellent. So we'll see where those numbers. Illinois is going to come in, I think, fairly strong here. We kind of feel that these numbers are kind of lagging a little bit. We're a little further along than what they're reporting in through here. But probably the emergence number will be one to watch. That'll be a kind of an indicator here how far along we are. But this warmer soil conditions here, a little warmer weather patterns, definitely going to help spring things along.
What fundamentals are trading in Chicago today?
Well, we train a little bit of weather. That kind of takes the edge off. Weather will be the dominant factor here. But I think we're kind of looking forward to Friday's monthly supply demand report. Trade kind of believes we're going to see just a little smaller export estimate come out. The shipments today were kind of skinny at the low end of expectations. And so if we don't see these exports pick up here, they're going to kind of use that as the negative side. And of course, carryout could be up just a little bit here. That's kind of the feature. The other thing is the technical picture here as we move through the week. We had a great week there last week, particularly midweek. We had some price reversals to the upside. We were able to close a little higher on the week there. So not too bad of a week. The thing technically is, I'd kind of keep an eye on today's high. It's clear across the board. Just as a benchmark, it's about 30% off the low back up towards the last highs we've made. And so technically, I think it's going to be kind of important here to sort of giddy up and go here as we move through the week. But the main event, of course, will be weather. Second event will be the supply-demand balance sheet report here at the end of the week. Then lastly, we'll kind of watch day-to-day demand and see what type of news we get out of that Black Sea region. It's kind of on, off on exports out of that region. But I think the trade's getting kind of wore out with what's going on out of the Black Sea and with Russia.
And turn your attention to South America. You mentioned that Safrinha, or second crop corn, it is in still good condition?
So far, but they've been actually dry here. They've moved out of their so-called rainy season. So we're kind of watching the weather maps there. They're starting to get behind on some moisture. They're entering or going through the pollination and kernel fill stage in some areas there. So that could be a weather event because the trade was kind of dialed in for some record or some big production out of that South American crop. Ideas were that that's going to be available here as we move into late summer, and that would be a competitor here. But if we run into some problems there or production concerns, that's going to set the stage here to help our market here in the U.S. as some of these countries come forward here and book some U.S. corn before our harvest takes place here this fall.
What are you hearing about domestic demand as it's related to old crop corn?
Good. Strong. It's kind of on hold. End users, for the most part, were able to get some coverage on. If you look at your old crop basis and even new crop, it's been stable in through here. There's going to be some pent-up demand here as we kind of move forward. So if you still have some old crop, I keep an eye on that. If you look at the overall futures price, old crop versus new crop, we kind of encouraged by how the July-December corn spread's trading. It kind of dips down to 50. And the commercial guys feels that spread can move on out to a dollar here as we move more into June before July delivery. So, and then when we visit with elevators and so forth, a lot of the grain's been priced or moved out of the elevator, and a lot of the ownership's in the farmer's hands is what we're seeing here, Todd.
Thank you much, Kurt.
You bet. Take care.
Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. Well, the Farm Doc team is still very busy in Brazil. On Friday, they visited a farm in southern Brazil. Gary Schnicki will tell us about that in just a moment. You'll be interested to hear about some of the land rental agreements. On Saturday, they visited the nation's largest privately held bank. I talked with Nick Polson about how the bank works with farmers there and makes loans to them. You can hear all of that online right now. It's in the YouTube playlist. And we'll also talk with Joanna Colucci again. I spoke with all three of them earlier today. They're traveling northward now towards Mato Grosso. She tells us a little bit about what they saw on Sunday as they were making their way across not completely paved roads to where they spent the night last night. Now let's return to Gary Schnitke and the conversations he was having with that farmer in southern Brazil.
The farmer we visited with was Raul Rodriguez, and he has he started the operation, or he took it over from his father in 1997, and they had about 4,000 hectares then, and he's grown that operation to slightly over 20,000 hectares now. They primarily do sugar cane. Sugar cane is their major crop, but they also do soybeans, a little bit of corn, and cattle. And they're trying some innovative ways to get multiple crops out of their operation and use cattle as a in a sustainable way. They have four separate operations, so that is divided up into four separate operations, and each one of those operations has its own manager. And the one we were at was primarily the sugarcane operation, and so unlike many operations here, they grew by renting land. So they rent a lot of their land, and Raul does most of the rental arrangements with he develops a relationship with those farmers or owners of the farmland.
I take it you probably talked with him a lot about some of the rental agreements. How different are they than what we might deal with here in the United States?
Yeah, they're very different. And given where he's at, almost all of them are denominated in soybean yield. So, and the yield here is bags per hectare. And the rents range from 15 to 25 bags of hectare per bags per hectare. That's agreed upon, and so the individual gets those soybeans, and then generally markets those themselves. That is a different relationship, or I don't see much of that in the United States. But that is a constant amount, no matter what.
Oh, interesting. So it's very much like the farmer sold him soybean, yep, and he has to deliver regardless of whether he...
Yeah. So he has to deliver regardless. He has to... The agreement is 15 bags per hectare. And he has to deliver that. And it doesn't matter what the yield is. So in poorer yielding years, that those bags become a higher percentage of the total yield and lower in a good yielding year. So, you know, actually your highest cash rent is in the low yielding years, because it's a higher proportion of the crop, and the price is probably higher as well, because the negative correlation between price and yield.
How much labor do they have, or employees?
Yeah, so they had 362 employees. 57 of them are in administration, 305 were operational, and operational would be the guys that run the machinery, manage the farms, etc. We calculated it out, and it was roughly an employee per 160 acres. So, you know, the one thing you have to keep in mind is, you know, U.S. and Illinois farms are probably more labor efficient than Brazilian farms. Having said that, Hughes was working with sugarcane, which is a more intensive crop than soybeans or corn. So we'll see what the employee situation looks like for some more soybean corn farms this week. And when we look at the cost here, and the number have shown us their cost, you know, U.S. farmers can compete on a cost basis with Brazil farmers. One thing you're going to have to remember, though, is that this is a much less developed country. So as they develop infrastructure and, you know, build grain bins on their farm, they are just going to get more efficient no matter what. And they're going to grow, because they're just like 100 or so years behind where the U.S. was at this point. So as they build that infrastructure, everything's going to become larger here. So I'm impressed with the untapped potential here yet in Brazil. One person told us that there's twice as much degraded pasture that they can bring into production as the cropland that exists here today. And driving around, you see that. So they're going to keep growing. Brazil's going to keep growing.
We'll be sure to come back at some point to that last bit about the lack of infrastructure in Brazil and being 75 to 100 years behind the United States, but having the technology that is currently up to date, including genetics and machinery, and what that competitiveness might mean in the future for changes that will need to take place here. In fact, about the only thing I can think of, at least off the top of my head, that might need to change is the price of land. It might need to stagnate or go down. We'll ask Gary about that at some point in the future to see if that's really the case. But let's learn a bit more about this land in Brazil. Joanna Colucci is leading the FarmDoc team on their trip across the nation.
Yes, during the weekend, we were in Goiânia, in Goiás state. Goiás is considered one of the main agricultural states in the center-west of Brazil. So we drove from Goiânia, the Goiás capital state, to Mato Grosso. Mato Grosso is considered the number one in soybean and corn production in Brazil. We are here in Mato Grosso today, and we will start the visits on farms here, soybean farms, corn, and livestock as well. At this moment, Safrinha is in the middle of the cycle. Farmers here in Mato Grosso, they planted Safrinha in February, and they will start the harvest of Safrinha, the corn, as a second crop in July.
And by comparison, what does it look like at this time? Is the corn, as we've been told, in really good condition?
Yes, so far the crops received a good amount of the rainings, especially because it's important to remember when you talk about the second crop corn, the Safrinha in the center west, it started when they have a wet season. So in January, February, March, and part of April. In May, here in the center west of Brazil, it started the dry season. So it's very important that corn receive good amounts of the water in the first 2 months, at least February, March, and part of April. After that is the dry season. So far, the situation sounds pretty good for Safrinha corn in Brazil. The forecast that Brazil will reach a new record this year.
Far is it in miles or kilometers that you drove yesterday, and is most of it now in Safrinha corn?
Actually, we drove from Goiânia to Cocalinho in Mato Grosso about 400 kilometers, part of this road without pavement, in country road. This area where we are now is not famous for Safrinha because it's one area that the dry season is started earlier than the average of the Mato Grosso. So here the primary crop is soybeans, followed by cover crops and pasture to livestock. The region that we are going today, Lucas do Rio Verde, Sinop, Sorriso, this is the main agriculture region in Mato Grosso and where the Safrinha is concentrated.
Joanna Colucci is a member of the FarmDoc team. She, Nick Paulson, Gary Schnitke, and Eric Morgan, who is with ALEC, that's the agricultural communications folks here on campus, are traveling across Brazil again this week. We'll hear more from them tomorrow. Each Monday, we check in with a Land-Grant University agricultural economist. Today, Frain Olson is here from North Dakota State University Extension. Hi, Frain. Thank you for being with us. The Northwestern Corn Belt had a lot of snow. That's melted, kind of wet. I think you had rainfall again. And now here we are in the month of May. I don't know whether spring wheat has been planted in the most northern regions of North Dakota, part of Minnesota, or not. I don't think so yet because that's an issue. We might come back to that. I am interested, however, in the corn soybean
Planting dates, particularly for corn, prevent plant date for it under crop insurance is May 25. Most of your crop insurance is 75% as opposed to 80 or 85%, maybe as low as 70 there. How do the agronomics come into play and economics as it's related to making those decisions? And do farmers really try to plant right up to that last date?
As with most things, it depends, right? There's a lot of variables that go into that. So for corn specifically, start there. The two pieces we have to kind of counterbalance when deciding on prevent plant. Obviously, economics do play into it, in the fact that we had some pretty good price selections for the initial prices within crop insurance. So it does help a lot, and that plays into it. However, from an agronomic standpoint, the two things we're weighing, first, what farmers around here have learned from a prevent plant standpoint is if you do decide to go with prevent plant, there are some carryover implications for the next year, possibly 2 years. And so the fact that we've had this before, farmers have gone through this kind of yield drag that we get on year two. Does play into the decision making. Some farmers have tried to go with cover crops to help suck some of the extra moisture out, which is beneficial and helps. But we still have some yield drag the second year. So the bias right now is if you can plant and it looks as though there's opportunities, usually you're better off by planting it and trying to get something into the ground, get that crop growing. And also, on top of that, there are some farmers that put pre-plant fertilizer on last fall. We had a very dry fall last year. A lot of fall fertilizer did go down into the ground. That obviously makes a difference as well. Now, the counter to that is, there's the front end issue and then there's the back end issue. And if we have a really good growing conditions, we get enough heat units, going with a shorter season corn variety can work. You're going to get a little bit of yield loss, but at least you can get a crop off. And again, if we have enough growing degree days during the summer, that's fine. The problem we run into is we have a cold, wet spring and then a cool summer. We don't often get enough heat units to be able to make full black layer. So sometimes we do have frozen corn, a light test weight corn, high moisture corn. And that's always something that concerns farmers a lot, especially, again, with natural gas prices as high as they are now. Drying costs per acre get to be pretty expensive. So we're playing this balancing act about, well, do we believe that the summer is going to be warm enough that we can go to a little bit shorter season corn, be able to get something planted, set ourselves up for better conditions next year, or is the risk too high of having some kind of frozen corn or light test weight corn that we have to deal with in the fall?
There is a lot more from Frayne Olson. We don't have time for it today, but we'll get it in as we make our way through this week. You, of course, have been listening to the closing. There's a lot more from Frayne Olson at NDSU, North Dakota State University. We don't have time for it at the moment, but we'll get more of it in later in the week. You've been listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the program online anytime you'd like at willag.org.